Blog Talk Radio.
You have just tuned in to an episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir, Sherry Pang, and Maria Wilson Duff. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, a world of ghosts, UFOs, and generally anything unexplained. The show is about to begin.
Welcome to Paranormal Horizons with Sherry and Maria tonight. So Jason's taking the night off, and we're going to have Maria. She's on. Hi, Maria.
Hey, Sherry. How are you?
Good, good. It's always nice to co-host with you. It's good female energy, and it's nice to be able to just have our own show tonight.
That is pretty strange. I think we've had to do this. Jason is starting to skip out on us.
I know, especially with Mother's Day. But you know what? Happy Mother's Day to each and every mother, grandmother, those who have lost their mothers, and who are mothers to their fur babies. So we want to wish a very happy Mother's Day. Both Maria and I are mothers ourselves. And it's just a nice day to relax and just kind of veg out and just enjoy the moment or, you know, whatever you're doing to enjoy the day. So how was your day, Maria?
Oh, it was very busy. Mother's Days usually are. I have to drive almost 2 hours to go see my mother, and I got to visit with her for several hours today. Come home and I've got my yard mowed and my house cleaned, and I'm ready to talk about the paranormal. What did you get to do today, Sherry?
Well, I had company. Actually, I don't know if those who know my Facebook site, but I gave away, and it's not very often, but I gave away 2 complimentary readings, 15-minute readings, and I felt like I really wanted to give back and want to, you know, even though that I don't have my mother, but it was just a time for me to feel like I wanted to give back and add value and to bring a smile or bring some healing and maybe perhaps some closure to those that are also, you know, wanting to get touch base with whoever their loved ones. So I gave away 2 readings, and it was really good. And I also did a medical Qigong treatment on a friend of mine. So, and then after my show, I'm going to be doing another reading. So I've got my day cut out for me, but it's a good way to give back and be able to feel good that I am giving up service. So, yeah, doing something.
Well, that has to make you feel good to be given to other people, and to especially to bring that extra smile to somebody's face that needed to hear a message that they normally cannot hear. And especially when you miss a loved one just so badly, and it pulls at the heartstrings to know that you can deliver that type of a message to someone, and I applaud you for that.
Oh, thank you. I love it. I love what I do. And, you know, every time I'm doing a reading, or hopefully every day, I'm fine-tuning my skills and just being able to be of clear service and clear channel to those that need it. But anyway, I don't know if David Hobbin, he's been on the show a few years ago. He is a paramedic. He's been on the show a couple times. We talked about him being a paramedic for many, many years. I think we're looking at like 30-something, 34, 37 years. He's been a paramedic, not an EMT. A paramedic is higher than an EMT. And so he's been a paramedic, and he's also been on a show. We talked about cemetery symbolism. So we talked about the different ones that symbolize whether it's faith, It could be your personal beliefs. It could be a symbol of something you like. So we talked about that at one time. But tonight we're going to talk about he works part-time in a funeral home. So talk about being in the paranormal. He's not only works in a funeral home, but he also is a paranormal investigator in Idaho. He investigates the Idaho State Penitentiary on a regular basis. So we're going to have David Hobbin. I met him at the Oregon Ghost Conference, probably about 3 years ago. So I hope that he's called in. Maria, has he called in yet?
He has not called in just yet, but we can talk about him till he does.
Okay.
Good. So, good or bad, however you want to do this.
So, he's a really good person. He just seems like just a wealth of information as far as being able to go and relay, just different things, whether it's people dying, whether it's, it could be anywhere from the paranormal, too.
I tell you what, my son is an EMT, and he is a firefighter. And the things that these people run into on a daily basis is amazing. I don't know how they keep their sanity. I don't know how they continue to go past the horrific things that they see. And, of course, they run into a lot of paranormal activity at some of these accidents and things. But to walk in to a fresh murder scene or something even more horrific than that, and I don't even want to even mention it, but how they keep going on day-to-day is beyond me.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Especially little children or, very tragic accidents. Have you heard a near fall yourself?
I had recently heard about a case that the call had come in to the 911 as that they thought it was a carbon monoxide poisoning case. And then when they get there, I guess the people, I don't know why they would have said that, but anyways, when they get in there, it turned out to be a murder case. And there were...
You're kidding. Wow.
So there were 4 people that had been murdered plus the family dog. So that was kind of disturbing, and the side of town it was on and things like that. Of course, it's an ongoing investigation, and they have arrested people for it. But just to walk in there and to see blood covered all over the walls, I cannot imagine what people, the first responders, have to put up with and to see. That a lot of the paramedics and EMTs in this area have received training because of a lot of the school shootings and or hostage situations. EMTs are given training to know how to remove officer's gun from their holster in case they needed to use it.
Oh, wow.
So it's a lot of danger that if people don't realize. And of course, there's a show now on A&E Network, and it's called Live PD. And that kind of shows, it is truly live. They do have some earlier recordings that they'll show you of cases that have happened while they were off air. But they show you exactly what these police officers go through just when they simply pull somebody over for a busted out headlight or tail light, or that they didn't use their turn signal when they should have. And it something so small will turn into this huge, ugly scene. If somebody's got warrants, they have to go to jail, they find drugs. There's been several times I've watched the show and they pull people over and they have children in the cars that are un, are not in a baby seat. And these people have been pulled over for speeding or reckless driving. I mean, it's just, I don't know how you would not lose your cool on somebody when they're putting a child's life in danger.
Yeah, imagine, wow.
And now they've even come out with a show for the first responders. And it shows you what they roll up on. You know, it's like, I can remember I watched a show about 9/11, and it was actually a movie, and it was called the World Trade Center. And I watched it because we're sitting here watching all of this on the news cameras and everything else. We're seeing what's actually happening. The people that are going in to these scenes don't know. They don't have a clue what they're coming up on. They just knew that a plane had hit the towers. None of them had seen this happen themselves. So they're thinking something small, like a twin-engine airplane. They didn't have the details that it was this huge jet carrying 100 passengers had slammed into the towers. And then, of course, when they're inside, they can't see what's going on outside, so they didn't know that another plane had hit the second tower. So it gives you the bird's eye view or the side that they see and knew. They're not outside watching it on cameras. So, you know, we sit and watch this and we second guess everything that they do. But when you're not involved, you don't know what they're going through.
Wow. That's
I believe
that's
he's called in, Sherry. Let me bring
okay.
him on just a moment.
Okay. Great. Hi, David.
There you.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good. I went and texted you. Did you get my text?
I did. I'm sorry. I got mixed up. I thought you were going to call me, so I was just going to wait for your call.
No, I'm on radio. I can't call you.
I know. But
maybe
I
could have
thought
I was on your switchboard, Ed.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, welcome to the show, and I already introduced you and everything. So can you tell us a little bit about, we were just talking about you working in a, are you still working in a funeral home? I know you're a paramedic, but are you still working in a funeral home?
Yes, I am. I still work there part-time.
What do you do at the funeral home?
Well, the position I work in is, it's called an ambassador, a funeral ambassador. And it basically covers, I can do anything that doesn't require a license. So to actually set up the funerals, things like that, you have to be a licensed funeral director, a licensed mortician. But I assist the morticians and the funeral directors with the different services, graveside services. In the past, I've done what's called removals, in other words, going out and picking up bodies and bringing them back to the funeral home. We don't do that anymore. We actually contract that out with someone else. But I still assist at funeral services, graveside services, memorial services, things like that.
Wow. Gee, that's a really interesting profession.
It's,
my girlfriend that I've known for over 40 years, she used to work at, she was working at a hairdresser, and she used to go and do the hair of the deceased.
Oh, yes.
And
yeah.
I, as a matter of fact, I can personally attest, I dated a mortician.
We have a couple of people that we have do that for us, that come in, the hairdressers, and the people are experienced with that, and they come in and do that.
Oh, nice. Wow. That's great.
That takes a special person, a very special person to be able
to
do that.
Yeah, it does. Just getting the people dressed and the makeup and the hair. Usually we have, the funeral home I work at, we have a very experienced mortician who is very good at his job as far as preparing the body and the makeup and things like that, making him look very, very natural. But the hairdresser is kind of a separate type part of the job, and we have regular hairdressers come in that are experienced in doing that.
That's great. I wonder, is the hair different when the person is deceased? That's a good question.
No, it really isn't. They actually will wash the hair and use a shampoo and conditioner just like you normally would do with your own hair, and then style it. Of course, we always try to have photographs of the person so that we know what hairstyle to use, you know, so it looks like it's the same style they had when they were alive. But it's basically the same as a regular, if you went into a beauty parlor or something like that and had your hair done, it's basically the same thing.
Okay, so it doesn't feel any different or anything, huh? I'm just curious.
No, it's not. The hair's basically the same, yeah.
Well, I will
make
it very easy.
A little bit more elasticity or a little bit more tightness to the scalp, being that there's no really blood flow going into the scalp.
yeah. But it's again, there's just special shampoos and conditioners just like you would use on your own hair.
Mm-hmm. So have you personally assisted on an embalming process, David, or witnessed it, or cremation? I'm just curious. First of all, have you ever witnessed an embalming process?
Well, no, I actually haven't. I've witnessed them. I've observed them. At one time, I was interested in actually taking the training to become a funeral director and a mortician. I probably won't be doing that. I'm pretty happy with just the work that I do now. But I have witnessed embalmings and can't really say I've helped with them because, again, you have to be licensed to actually do those. But other than, you know, moving and some minor things, it's more just witnessing that. And as far as the cremation process, that's a separate license for that. But I have assisted with, as far as cremation, I have assisted with preparing the body, putting them in the different containers and things, and actually helping to kind of slide them into the crematory. So to that extent, I've helped with those.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's,
I know
cremation
that
is
you
quite
are
a process.
Also a paranormal investigator. You have or routinely have investigated the Idaho Penitentiary. Is that right, David?
Yes. I give tours out there. I'm a tour guide at the old Idaho State Penitentiary. And that's kind of what got me involved with the paranormal research, because there's a local paranormal investigation group that does fairly regular investigations out there. We do sometimes 3 to 4 investigations a year out there. And I got connected up with the paranormal investigation group. We're actually part of, we've gone through a couple different names right now. It's called Big River Paranormal. And we cover Idaho, parts of Washington, parts of Oregon. And we're actually part, if you're familiar with the TV program Ghost Hunters, Jason and Grant, we're actually part of that organization. TAPS is the Atlantic Paranormal Society, and we're part of what's called the TAPS family. So we subscribe to all the scientific methods that they use, things like that. We're kind of indirectly part of that organization.
Oh, wonderful. Wow. I believe that your organization was at the Oregon Ghost Conference. Is that correct?
Yes, there's a... We have a team over in Oregon, in the Portland area, and we have members that live in Oregon, so they're kind of the Oregon extension of our team, and they have, they set up a booth, and they're over at the Oregon Ghost Conference as well.
Oh, that is wonderful. Yes, I was there. The energies this year was really strange. I was just very weird, and I'll return next year, but the energies was just off. I just felt like it was just totally a little bit different. I can't really describe it. It's just a little bit off. So,
yeah,
it was different, very, very different. But, yes, and also you've been a paramedic, and I'm sure you've had your share. We had you on the first time a few years ago.
You know, you've had your share of witnessing death and that kind of thing. And I do remember you said most of them were all cardiac cases. Is that correct, David?
Well, most are medical cases. There have been, I've worked some trauma cases, car accidents, just a few plane crashes, some fatal car crashes, some violent situations, gunshots, things like that. Most of the patients that I've dealt with that died in the field that we were able to pronounce in the field were primarily medical causes. A lot of heart attacks, some long-term medical problems, cancers, things like that.
Mhm. Okay. Wow. So what would you say in part of being a paramedic was one of the cases that was very difficult for you?
Cases that we can't really do anything that makes a difference, those are really difficult because we're trained in all kinds of techniques and methods of preserving life, different treatments and things. And in any case, any time that we arrive there and there's really nothing we can do, those are always kind of difficult to deal with. Children's cases, I've had a few cases of, for example, motor vehicle crashes, fatal crashes that have involved young people and children. Those are always difficult to deal with. The medical cases, generally those are older people, and you know, this isn't really trying to justify anything, but you know, they've lived a full life, they're adults, but children, you're always thinking about, you know, the child hasn't really had a chance to live a full life, and their life was cut off very short, and those are always difficult to deal with.
Oh, wow. So your son has gone through that too, Maria, right?
I'm sorry?
Oh, yes.
No, I was talking to Maria.
Sorry.
Okay.
Maria's son,
yes,
has probably gone through those things too.
He has. I think one of the most difficult ones was a child was run over by a school bus. And no matter if somebody had been right there to take care of that child at that moment, it wouldn't have done any good. And that bothered a lot of people. But when you have to sit there and look at something like that and there's nothing you can do, that is heart-wrenching.
Wow.
It's,
yeah, I remember one of my
first,
I can share this, I don't know if I ever told you, David and Maria, but my first time when I was seeing death at the nursing home, you know, I was a CNA part-time, and I just was in it for about a year, and I just didn't want to, I saw too much, and it was very, very, I mean, I was able to see that part of life where you work in the hospitals and things like that, but I can say that, you know, my experience of seeing a person that was dead at the time, you know, it's really very eye-opening to, you know, to be able to experience that and say, okay, now it's time for you to clean that person up. I said, hey, what? Say what? Me clean up? Oh, yeah, that's part of your job. I was like, okay. But no, the first time I didn't do it because I was too scared and everything. But after that, you become immune to it, right, David? You become immune to it.
Well, I don't know if you become immune to it, but you get used to it, maybe.
Okay.
I think it always affects you in some way, but you're able to control your emotions a little bit better, and you're able to control how it affects you. But it's not really like you're immune to it, like you don't care. You still care, but you're able to control it a little better.
Yeah, it's kind of like you don't let you, it's like, you know, you got to take care of your business, you know, it's kind of like you don't fall apart, but then again, you don't want to, be emotionally distraught, you know, or be so tough that you have no emotion. You got to have, you know, I think there's a part of being balanced, I think.
Yeah, and that's true. I've been fairly lucky. The ambulance services, the emergency medical services organizations I've dealt with or that I've worked for have been Small to medium agencies where actually between calls we had a little time. We had a little time to follow through with the patient to find out what happened to them. If you work in large systems, New York City, Chicago, things like that, where you're literally going from one call to another, you don't really have time to, you know, you try to get that patient to the hospital as quickly as you can because you know you got another call waiting. So sometimes those you don't get as involved with the patients as you would have liked to. You don't get a chance to follow up, see how they did, you know, things like that. So I've been fairly lucky. I've always been able to do that, do a follow-up and spend time really taking care of the patient.
So what's the most rewarding thing as a paramedic? What was the some of the rewarding things that you have in your career before you retired?
I haven't retired. I still do it.
You know that, okay. You're more a supervisor. Is that your supervisor now?
Well, it's more
that.
Education.
Yeah,
and,
I remember.
Yeah. More education and consulting and things, but I just renewed my paramedic license for another 2 years. I just did that again. This is my 40th year as a paramedic.
Wow.
Still licensed. And, you know, the rewarding things are basically when you have a patient and literally you can see something that you did for them, a treatment or whatever, something you did for them really made a difference. It really, you know, I'm not going to get as dramatic as we, you know, save their lives, but that happens sometimes. You, something that you do and you can see, you do a treatment, you do an intervention of some type of medical intervention, and the patient actually improves. You actually see that it's done good, and that's the rewarding part.
That's awesome. Wow. Jeez. So, yeah, that's interesting. Maria, do you have anything to say?
I wanted to know, we started to talk about the cremation part of your job. I know there is a lot of people that absolutely refuse to be cremated. What's your opinion? Why do you think that matters to a person?
Well, sometimes it's a religious belief. There are certain religions that for a long time and then still don't. There are some religions that still do not agree with cremation because they feel it's desecrating God's creation, it's desecrating the body, and it's, to an extent, makes resurrection more difficult if you want to look at it from that point of view. Jewish, Orthodox Jewish religion still does not cremate. Catholic religion did not cremate for a long time. I'm not sure if they do that or not now. And then there are some religions that's all they do is cremation. That one of the reasons that I enjoy working at the funeral home where I'm at is dealing with just all the many, many different types of cultures and religions. And they all handle death a little bit differently. The services, the ceremonies, things like that are all a little different. And just learning about the different cultures, the different beliefs and things is just really a fascinating part of that job. I've worked a number of, it's interesting in Boise, we have apparently a fair number of Buddhist folks that are part of the Buddhist religion. I've worked several services with that, and that's always a cremation, and that the family's actually involved in it. Directly after the memorial service, it's a direct cremation. Everybody follows us into the crematory. The family goes in, and it's actually one of the Buddhist monks that presses the button that turns the crematory on that starts that process. I've done Hispanic services where the family is in and maybe the eldest son pushes the button literally to start the process. Most folks, I think, that are opposed to cremation, I think it's more religious belief, again, that it's just you're desecrating God's creation, you're desecrating the body, and you're making resurrection, again, maybe the right term is more difficult, but something connected with that.
Wow.
It's amazing. It's amazing the different religious beliefs on.
It is. It's fascinating.
Even, yeah, it's different in life. It's different in death, and nothing seems to be the same. I just always wondered because I know, of course, my mother is still alive, but she just looks at you and points her finger and says, "You better not do that to me." We've never asked her why, but I could not imagine. I mean, I know there's been people that have burnt to death. And I know a lot of the times that the smoke takes them over before the actual death, the burning death does. And I guess a lot of people maybe put that in their heads as well, even though that they are deceased, they're not going to feel that. But to them, that is something that they would never be able to bear in thought of something like that happening to themselves. I know I wouldn't. I mean, I couldn't imagine. And I know there's a lot of people that have suffered that death, and that just absolutely breaks my heart. I can remember a wreck that had happened. The gentleman had actually died in the wreck before his vehicle had caught on fire. And, of course, nobody could do anything but sit there and watch the vehicle burn.
Thank goodness
he had already, I mean, he was killed on impact. But, and just the emotional scars that the people watching this happen is something that a lot of people just can't ever recover from. I always think about that. I mean, those people just had to stand back. And these were paramedics and EMTs. They couldn't do anything.
Right.
I mean, you just had to stand there and watch.
Right. And that is, that's always difficult when you just stand there. You've got all this training, you've got all this knowledge, and there's not a thing you can do. You're absolutely right.
Wow.
It is. It's a sad. I mean, and a lot of people don't realize. They really don't realize what police, fire, paramedics, what they see and what they have to witness, because we're all outsiders. We hear this little news story, and it's nothing. It doesn't give the details. It doesn't give anything. It just says, you know, there was a gentleman that was killed in a wreck on a road because a dump truck hit him head on. They don't witness that stuff. And I think if a lot more people knew the details and the things that you all had to go through, that, I don't know, maybe people wouldn't be such jerks. I don't know. I mean, we're surrounded with so much negativity and we're so desensitized to so many things. I just don't think people realize what everybody goes through to save just one person.
That's true. That's right. And our emergency responders have post-traumatic stress disorder, just like, you know, similar to military. And they're finally realizing that. Years ago, when I first took my paramedic training, my first several years as a paramedic, there was no such thing as critical incident stress debriefing for us. If you had a bad call, you felt bad about something, basically is, hey, it's part of the job, suck it up, you know, and go on. But now at least there's critical incident stress debriefing available, treatment for emergency responders that are having difficulty. And I think it's probably keeping more good quality emergency responders in the field, because years ago, if you couldn't handle something, you just quit because there was no help available. Now at least there's help available. And I just read an article not too long ago, emergency dispatchers, the 911 dispatchers, they're finally realizing that these folks are also first responders. You're taking those emergency calls from people that are scared, are distraught, are, you know, and you're as much the dispatchers are are as much a first responder as the first paramedics, EMTs, police, fire that arrive on scene?
Well, a lot of the 911 dispatchers, they also have to hear the side where the police officer or anyone that is involved in shooting. I mean, they have to listen to somebody that they work with all the time, being hurt, shot, whatever. And that's got to be horrible for them.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Mm. So at least there's some help now.
Yes, and it's so much better than it used to be. Like I said, it was when I first started out, if you had a call that you were having trouble with, if you were, really emotionally upset, if you had some type of a problem with a call, it was just like, hey, it's part of the job, you know, suck it up, you know, and just move on. And
well, a lot of the paramedics and EMTs do not get hazard pay like firefighters or police officers do.
That's true. Now, at least as far as training, too, first response, police, fire, paramedics, part of the initial training that you go through is how to handle stress, what to do if you have it, things like that. So even right off the bat, as far as your initial training, you're getting some good information on how to handle that and how to help you through those situations.
Wow. That's crazy. But anyway, so you've been busy, and I hear that you're recovering from a surgery. Is that true?
My gosh. Oh, geez. It's one of the worst parts of my life.
You're healing. That is correct, right?
I'm healing. Yes, exactly. One of the problems that old paramedics like myself have is back problems. Because years ago, we didn't worry about taking care of ourselves. We lifted, we twisted our backs, we did all kinds of horrible things to our body. And thought more about, you know, to take care of the patient, but we didn't think about taking care of ourselves. And about 2 years ago, I started having back problems show up. It eventually got worse, and I ended up just last week, May 2nd, I ended up going in for surgery. It's called a laminectomy. Three of my vertebrae, the opening where the nerves go through, had basically closed up and putting pressure on the nerves. And it was a little more serious than we thought it was going to be. The neurosurgeon that did the surgery was thinking there's three vertebrae that were involved. He just was thinking, okay, I just need to make about a 1-inch incision right in the center, and I can go up and I can go down and take care of it. And the damage was a lot worse than he thought. And instead of an hour or so in surgery, I was over 4 hours in surgery, and I've got about a 5-inch scar on my back right now. So it was much more extensive than they thought. So, of course, the recovery is more extensive. But it is. I am improving it. I've had difficulty walking in the past, and that's getting better. The pain that the back problem was causing is not there anymore, so that's always a plus when it doesn't hurt, you know. But, I'm on the road to recovery, and I should be back the next couple of weeks, probably be back in pretty good shape.
Yay, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, well, in the meantime, because of the difficulty walking for several months now, I haven't been able to work at the funeral home or do the tours at the old penitentiary that I usually do, because that's all involves walking. So I'm looking forward to hopefully the next couple of weeks or so getting back to the point where I can get back to work there too.
Speaking of the penitentiary, what is the craziest thing that you have witnessed there?
Oh, we've had some pretty interesting stuff there. One of the reasons that we do several investigations every year is because we always find something. We always get something when we go. We've gotten voices, EVPs. We've gotten voices. We've got noises. We've got some visual stuff. One of the most dramatic ones is the investigations we do out of the old penitentiary. We actually open those up to the public, and they can come and do the investigation with us. And we limited, of course, the number of people that go with us, but they're always with experienced team members, and they're able to go on the investigations with us. And one of the old cell houses that there's the four floors, four tiers in this one cell house, and usually it's not open. Only the first floor is open when we do the public tours, but when we do the investigations, they open up all the buildings to us, all the floors. And we had a young lady that was on our team that was on the top floor, the fourth floor of the cell house, and there was some graffiti scrawled on the wall in the back of one of the cells. All the cells are locked. So she had her face up very close to the bars, trying to put her face kind of through the bars a little bit, trying to get as close as she could to read the graffiti that was on the back wall. When she stuck her face through the bars, she felt a hand come down the side of her face and literally kind of pet the side of her face, and she heard a voice go, "Pretty." And that's probably one of the more dramatic ones we've had. Huh? Yeah. And that lady, that she's one of our team members, and it was almost 3 years before she would go back. into that building. Yeah. We've got voices. We set up static infrared video cameras throughout the different buildings. We have one that we just got a couple of years ago where we had a static camera set up in a cell house, and the infrared camera's got a red light on it. And it appears to be a head coming out of one of the cells looking towards the camera, and you can see the eyes reflecting, two eyes reflecting red from the red light, looking out of the cell and then going back into the cell. But we get a lot of voices. We hear footsteps. Personally, it wasn't even an investigation. It was after one of the tours I had done. And I was in a cell house all by myself. I knew there was no one else there. And I heard cell doors slam. You know, so it's pretty active location.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's...
I love to be able to sit in a place and just listen to the history. Because it will just ooze through.
Yeah, and there's so much history there. Yes, it will. Yeah.
That is one thing that I enjoy.
After those experiences, you do believe in life after death, correct, David?
Yes, I do.
Was it something you're imagining, or was it something you actually believe right away?
I will say the paranormal team I work with, we do a lot of different investigations. We will do private residences if we're asked, businesses, historic buildings, things like that. And probably 95% of the investigations we do, we don't find anything abnormal. The pictures on the wall vibrate, but that's because two blocks away there's a train going by, you know, things like that. So we find a lot of normal explanations for things that happen, but it's about the 3-5% that we can't explain. That's the fun part. That's what keeps us going.
Oh, wow.
My favorite thing is when you're touched.
Yes. I've had that happen once.
Love that.
That was
really weird.
An old, it is. You know, I didn't realize what was going on for a few seconds. there's an old tuberculosis hospital in Idaho, and we were doing an investigation, and I happened to be down in the morgue area. And my part of the team is I take still photographs. I take photographs with a digital camera. And I was down in the morgue area, and I felt a hand kind of laid on the back of my neck, rubbed the back of my neck, and kind of patted my neck for a few seconds. And it took me a couple of seconds to realize what was going on, and I was going, oh, that's pretty cool.
So did you, David, have you found anything that was like negative entities or demonic infestations or anything like that when you have done your investigations?
You know, actually, we haven't. Our director that's been doing this for over 30 years, I think she has had one instance where they, it was before I joined the team, and they were doing an investigation that I believe was a private residence, and the team went into the house, and they went into this one room of the house, and several of the team members just all of a sudden got this feeling, and they kind of all agreed, we got to get out of here. We should not be here. We need to get out. And then we left. That's one of the things is on the team. If you're a team member, if you've got a feeling, and you may be the only one, say, this isn't right. Something's wrong here. We need to leave. We leave. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to have any bad situations. But it's really rare that anything like you know, in the movies you see all the time in the movies, people are hit and pushed and scratched and all that, and that is actually, from our experience anyways, it's really, really rare that happens. And we've only had, like I said, maybe once or twice in all the years that we've been doing it.
That's wonderful.
Luckily, everybody, the ones that we do, the investigations we do, our main goal is to try to communicate. And luckily, we've had some good results with that.
So, do you do cleansings as well?
We don't, but we have access to people that do. So if it's a residence, the owners, we give them the results. Say that we find something that's out of the ordinary, that's abnormal. If we're requested, we do have contacts with several different religions that will come in and do cleansings, and we have contacts that will do exorcisms. But cleansings are fairly common. We put people in touch with folks that will do that for them.
Do you find that it's harder to remove a family spirit or human spirit, I guess you would say, than it would be something that is not human?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Do you find, in your experience, do you attend those cleansings?
You know, I don't. Generally,
okay.
The cleansings... the team doesn't do that. We put the owners or the people in contact with whoever's going to do the cleansing, and it's just them usually that's involved. We don't get involved with those at all.
Okay, that was my question. I didn't know if you had noticed that it was harder to remove a human spirit than it would be a non-human spirit.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I haven't had experience with that, so I'm not sure.
Most of the time, the family spirit that's hanging around is not going to cause enough problems that anybody wants them removed.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. If we can't, of course, say with 100% of surety that it's grandma or whoever. But if there is some type of a spirit there that's present, if they're not causing problems, they may be welcome there, and the people in the house, so that's okay. They'll let them stay. You know, they're kind of friendly, or they don't cause problems, and people will say that, yeah, that's fine. They can stay. We don't want them to leave. It's okay.
I always find that more comforting. I've done an investigation before where it was two family members actually. The couple had bought Grandma and Grandpa's house, and they were and these two elderly people were pretty active because they would open up doors and turn on lights, and they would leave footprints behind. And the reason we were called in to investigate was just to comfort the homeowners. And So we did the investigation and we presented the evidence, and they would laugh at some of the responses, the EVPs that we would get, because they completely understood what was being said that would come from their grandparents, where we did not know. We were just hearing a response. We didn't know what it meant. And that couple, they just lit up. It was excitement that, yes, grandma and grandpa are still here.
Cool.
And it just made them so happy. Yes. I love investigations like that. The ones that you don't
like are
the ones that they call and say something's coming out of the ceiling. Come get it out.
Yeah, but it's always cool, you know, and we've had folks that have done that. If there's some presence there, you know, talk to them, you know, recognize them, say good morning to them in the morning, say good night, you know, just you know, we've had people that kind of get them involved in their lives and include them in conversations or whatever, you know.
And it goes a whole lot easier. And a lot of people don't realize, too, that if you're being, something is waking you up in the middle of the night, if you'll just tell them, look, I'm sleeping, you're disturbing me, please stop. And you
That's
know
right.
what?
That's
99%
right.
of the time, that works.
Yes, it does. You're right. You're absolutely right. Most of the entities, you know, they're friendly. And one of the things that we have a couple of big rules with our team, but one of the big rules, and this is actually comes from the Atlantic Paranormal Society that we're part of. One of the big rules is we never do any negative provoking, you know, yelling at a spirit. You know, if you were real, you'd come out and we demand that you do this and kind of get nasty with them. Nah, we don't do that. You know, talk to them nice and friendly, just like you would talk to a regular person. Don't tick them off, you know, just be nice to them. And that's kind of one of our big rules.
And that's exactly right. And another thing people don't realize is that spirits, when they come through with the EVPs and we can play them back for them, just because they're saying it doesn't mean it's true. Just because
That's
this
right.
tells you that he's Uncle Joe doesn't mean he's Uncle Joe.
That's right. There's one of the things that we don't use that I know some teams do. We don't use Ouija boards. And people are always kind of surprised at that. We don't bring a Ouija board with us. And the theory that we have is that it's not that we don't believe they work. It's we believe that they might work too well. And like you just said, this what appears to be maybe a little girl spirit coming through, they're not always telling you the truth. You don't really know necessarily what you're letting through. So we just don't take the chance. We're not experts in it. I was doing a tour at the old penitentiary, and there were two young men. I think they were probably about 18, 20 years old. And the director of the penitentiary was there, and we were talking, and she'd mentioned the fact that I was part of the paranormal team, and we encouraged these two young men that were very interested in it to sign up for one of the tours. And they'd mentioned that they were very much into Ouija boards. And the director of the penitentiary, not knowing what our policy was, said, oh, you should bring your Ouija board with you. I'm sure the team would love to do it. And I said, no. And I said, that's why we got this 18-year-old and 20-year-old kid. And they were saying, oh, we can handle it. We know how to use it. We know how to do this. And I said, no, you don't.
No.
If you get, you know.
You don't. There's plenty of horror stories that start with the use of a Ouija board.
Yeah. These two young kids, oh, we know how to handle them. We know what to do. I said, no, you do not. If you bring a Ouija board here, I will break it into pieces, you know. But,
exactly.
Yeah, and that's the reason. We don't know what's coming through. We don't want to take the chance.
No, and I've seen paranormal teams around here, and they were advertising, you know, slick out that they're using a Ouija board and you all need to come in and see what we're doing and come to this place and watch our film. And I'm like, they're idiots, because the whole time they were doing this, they were doing exactly like you're not supposed to do. You don't yell at a spirit. You don't.
No.
You don't do things like that. There's no reason. You have to treat a spirit the way you would another human being. I'm not
exactly
going to walk
right.
up to you and start yelling at your face for no reason, just because you're not
That's
speaking
right.
to me.
That's exactly right. And just
Wait, Maria, have you heard if anybody is challenging them and they get retaliate or have that experience, whoever the company you were with at that time, have you, or I should say both of you, have either one of you experienced any negative effects of somebody having bad energy or challenging those type of things, the negative things, I should say?
A bad reaction to being spirit being challenged?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sure David has too.
What do they
yeah,
do?
Yeah.
What have they done?
Well, one of the worst things they can do is they shut up. They don't communicate with you anymore. You know?
That's right.
You never know. If you take them off, they say, well, screw you, I'm leaving, you know?
Right.
Right.
Wouldn't
That's
you?
Exactly right.
Or they can retaliate and really make your life hell while you're in that building or place.
Well, and with you doing the novice hunts, I'm sure you've noticed that activity with some people in the group, activity will go away. Or you won't get the activity that you're used to getting. But when that group leaves, or a certain person in that group leaves, the activity will pick up.
Hmm. Okay.
And sometimes
you
can kind of tell. Sometimes you
Have
can
you
tell, too,
attention?
That the...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No. I was just asking you, have you ever paid attention to that happen?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes. And sometimes you can actually feel a change in the atmosphere. You know, everything feels kind of friendly and quiet, and all of a sudden it's just something you know that something has changed, the atmosphere has changed, it's becoming more aggressive, things like that. And you can kind of almost feel that sometimes just in the air. When that happens,
the heaviness, it's almost like a humidity, like the humidity just went up,
mm-hmm.
skyrocketed, and the air feels really
yeah, it's
heavy.
A, it's a heaviness.
Like that
happens. Yeah.
Wow, that's terrible, isn't it, when you start challenging them?
I don't know why people think that they have to challenge a spirit. I guess it's because it's just like social media. They can run their mouth
oh,
because
sure.
nobody's in front of them.
yeah, that's right.
That's
you know, it's they think that, you know, there's a spirit there, so they have to do what I tell them to do. No, they don't. You know. That's why
yeah,
you know, please
don't
be going.
Yes, he's Zach Bagan, and he honestly challenges the spirits. And it's interesting how, you know, psychically I can pick up that he has quite a few attachments on him. I can see them. But he's really known to bring them on. You wonder
yes,
why.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I got a chance to meet him years ago. He and his team actually came out and spent the night at the old penitentiary.
Okay.
And... He even admitted one time that he was probably doing too much of the negative provoking, and he was trying to cut back a little bit on that. He realized that maybe that wasn't such a good thing to do. So he's learning a little bit.
Wow.
Well, and that's
yeah.
like the demon house that he
bought.
Oh, Lord,
yeah.
That he investigated.
I got a kick out of that house in Gary, Indiana. I grew up in Hammond, Indiana, which is about 20 minutes from Gary, Indiana. And that was kind of interesting seeing what he had done at the house, buying it, and then eventually having it demolished. So
I think of that as many people that had a fit because that house was demolished. I think that was the best thing he could have done. Especially after
yeah.
he did the movie and he put that movie out.
Oh, yeah.
It already had too much attention because when he bought it, it was all over the news. So you know he had to put security around that all the time. And if that house was that bad, those security guards wouldn't have been able to be anywhere near that place.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you'd had people trying to get into that house all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody wants a new haunted house to go investigate. They want that virgin ground to figure out what's going on. That's right.
Yeah, and unfortunately, not everybody respects privacy and private property and things like that. They just kind of break in and go where they want. And
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Hmm. So what's going to be happening within your world once you get around? You're going to be doing some going back, like you said, to the penitentiary. Are you going to be also going back to work at the funeral home and continuing your paramedic? And I remember we were talking off the air that possibly you were thinking about maybe relocating to Chicago. Is that something that might be up in the air for you?
Well, yeah, I'm going to, as soon as I'm able to physically, I'm going to get back to the funeral home, back to doing the old penitentiary tours and the paramedic work. I toyed with the idea, and I do this every once in a while, just kind of toy with the idea of moving back to the area that I grew up in, back there around Chicago and Northwest Indiana. But that's just kind of one of those fun things to think about. It probably isn't going to happen, but I get to go back every couple year or a couple times a year for conferences and for work. So I get my fix a couple times a year. I get my Chicago fix a couple times a year. So I think I'm probably not, at least at this point, going to stay where I'll stay where I am.
Okay, cool. Wow.
Yeah, you sound like you're pretty happy where you're at.
Yeah, it's going real well. I consider myself semi-retired, but I still like to stay really active. And I still do some traveling about once or twice a month. I'm an evaluator for an agency that accredits ambulance services. I'm an on-site evaluator for that. So once or twice a month, I get to travel and do those all over the country. And I like to stay busy. That's why I do a lot of the volunteer work at the penitentiary. I teach a class on cemetery history and symbolism. That's all volunteer. But I like to keep busy. I can't just sit in the house all day.
So we totally missed the whole thing about the symbolism. And we've already ran out of time for this evening. So this is something you're going to have to come back on because
okay.
I noticed,
okay.
And I'll throw this one thing out there. I noticed that the cemetery that my father is buried in has an area with a lot of the Masonic symbols, the big
mm-hmm.
chairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that blows my mind that that's even in a cemetery. And the area that they surround, there is nobody in that area. And, of course, the chairs face north, south, east, and west.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I need to know why.
The area of the cemetery, the Masonic areas, are set up basically, it's set up just like the meeting room in a Masonic lodge. And it has the chairs at the different stations. There's usually the common one is an altar with an open Bible on it. There's usually a statue of that or one of those.
Yeah.
But yeah, the area that the Masonic burial area is set up to look just like the Masonic temple and the meeting room.
Okay, so I'm going to do some research on that cemetery, and then I'm going
mm-hmm.
to get in touch with you. And then
okay.
maybe you can explain to me the whole reasoning why they do that.
Sure.
But can you tell people how they can get in touch with you? Are you on Facebook or do you have a website?
I'm on Facebook. That's probably the easiest way to do it. David Hobben, Habben. I'm on Facebook. And they're more than welcome to contact me on that. And I can, eventually, if they have questions, whatever. The presentation that I use in my class, I used hundreds of my own photographs in that class. And Sometimes I will send people a link. It's on a Dropbox file. I'll send them a link and they can download that and see the pictures. But, yeah, Facebook is fine. They can contact me there. And if things could move along, I could give them my email address, things like that. But Facebook would be a really good, easy way to do it.
Thank you so much. This was amazing to listen to you speak tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for asking.
Yeah, good to have you back, David. I'll be talking to you, okay?
All right, thank you.
Yeah, take care.
All right.
So next week I'm going to be hanging out, and, I've got some plans next week. So Maria and Jason will be Maria will be taking my place, and Jason will be back. But thank you guys for your support in all these years that we've been having Paranormal Horizons. I can't believe that I'm going to be going on 4 years on radio. This coming
crazy,
October, and we're going to be kicking back my old radio show, Portals to Enlightenment. Your journey to body, mind, spirit is going to be kicking back into the summer, so I'll be having my radio show this summer again. I want to thank you, everybody, again, for your support and supporting Paranormal Horizons in our Facebook page. I want to thank you. Our Facebook page is almost at 4,000 people following us. Isn't that amazing, Maria?
That is, and that's only because we put nothing but funny, funny memes. That's all we put. We don't put anything.
I know. It's all, it's great. You do a good job. I mean, between you and Jason and I, we kind of covered the gamut. And, it's interesting how some people may like some of them and some people don't. But it's all good. And we're just here to entertain. And nothing personal, nothing derogatory, nothing. It's just something for entertainment and hopefully bring you a little bit of a smile and perhaps a laugh to your day or that moment.
Exactly. We want you to have peace, happiness, and laughter that makes you live longer than anything.
Yay! And Maria, thank you so much. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for coming on the Paranormal Horizons team and joining us, and thank you for covering for me, or we just go together. It's great, too. And, it's been a chaotic day. I wasn't as prepared as normal, but you know how we are. We like to wing it and just go with the flow of things and just bring back as much information and as much experience to you that are the people that are listening to us anyway.
Yes, we enjoy it. Thank you very much for including me in it.
Anyway, guys, go ahead. Sorry about that.
I think that's right. It's time for me to go to bed and for you to get busy with your job.
Yes, I've got a reading coming. So, yes, I'm going to be doing a reading. And so, I was going to do a two readings, but I thought, I've had a long day. I've had company all day and, just trying to get everything together. And I've got a busy day tomorrow with readings and, that kind of thing and working out. But anyway, this next week, take care. I'm going to be back on tour this next weekend, so I'm not going to be available, but Maria will be there and Jason. And I want to thank each and every one of you from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you for participating and supporting Paranormal Horizons.
And if we have a guest for next week, we will announce it on our Paranormal Horizons Facebook page. But I kind of think Jason and I will end up winging it. So that's always a surprise. So I hope everyone is...
You never know what's going to come out of his mouth, right?
That's exactly right. And it's pretty entertaining. So I hope everyone joins us next week, and we will see you then. Everyone have a good night.
Take care, everybody. Peace.